From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, February 9th, 2018. And on this day, overnight, the state moved inmates and put staff on leave from Downey's correctional facility. Governor Paula Page has long said he'd close the prison. And we'll look at why L.L. Bean is changing its return policy and why it matters. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
First tonight, Washington County residents and former employees at Downey's Correctional Facility in Machiasport say the early morning closure of the minimum security prison is a betrayal by the governor that they can't accept. The prison's abrupt closure has stunned people in the region. They say they now fear the economic consequences in the area of the loss of more than 50 jobs at DCF.
It all started around 4:30 Friday morning. Heavily armed Department of Corrections personnel, backed up by the Maine State Police, arrived at the Downey's Correctional Facility while it was still dark outside. They woke up the prisoners and began taking them out of their cells and loading them onto buses. Employees were ordered to leave, and not in the nicest of terms, according to Kevin Millay, a retired former employee at the prison who was on the scene to speak with reporters there.
They didn't even communicate one iota, no way, no nothing. Show up with guns and say leave. That's that communication. Show up with guns, leave. Here's your pink slip. The SWAT team showed up here. They showed up here with guns. The state police showed up here. We're taking over. Leave. It's no wonder somebody didn't have a heart attack.
Maine State Police spokesman Steve McCausland said troopers were on the scene for security and had no contact with inmates or staffers. They also escorted buses with about 60 inmates to the Mountain View Correctional Facility in Charleston. By 9 a.m., about a dozen employees at the prison had gathered in the parking area trying to find someone to provide them with information. Jim Mackey, a longtime union representative for corrections officers, said in his 30-year-plus career in Maine, he's never seen anything like this.
I have never in my career seen this sort of action taken in the state of Maine towards state employees.
It was a dramatic ending to a simmering showdown between the governor, the legislature, and business and municipal leaders in Washington County who have been working to try to keep the facility open. Peter Steele, the governor's director of communications, said previous efforts by other governors to shut down DCF failed because of political pressure and that its closure was a management issue for the entire state corrections system. Speaking with reporters, LePage said he took the initiative to close the facility after state lawmakers opposed his efforts to shut it down.
As I sit here today, I have a jail that costs more to operate than the maximum security prison in the state of Maine. The legislature did not fund it for the total two-year biennial, and at some point it was going to close, and I saw today as an ability to save the state a little bit more money and to help the legislature fund Medicaid expansion, which passed in November. So thank you very much.
LePage's early morning DCF closure left State Representative Will Toole, a Machiasport Republican, fielding a flurry of phone calls from angry and worried constituents. Toole recently introduced a bill to provide $5.5 million to fund the facility through June of 2019 and require a study on the potential effects of any closure. Last week, it received the overwhelming support of the legislature's Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. He says the move to close the prison was the governor's way of bullying legislators into rejecting the bill.
I don't know what the outcome will be, but I would let people in Washington County know that we're doing whatever we have to do to make sure this isn't going to go quietly.
Senate Republicans also released a written statement critical of the governor's move. The people of Washington County deserve better, it said. And Maine Attorney General Janet Mills said the action flies in the face of the clear intent of the legislature as expressed in the biennial budget, in statute, and in the deliberations of the Joint Standing Committee on Criminal Justice. Meanwhile, as several businesses in the Machias area ponder how they will replace the prison workers who were transferred to Charleston, Former DCF employees such as Scott Guerra say the region will respond.
We try to rally the community and get our voices heard in Augusta, and hopefully with the lawmakers of Washington County, they'll help us get the word out, and hopefully we can change the governor's mind and get these prisoners back here and get these people back to work.
Members of the governor's staff said there are job vacancies in Washington County that may be a match for some of the DCF employees, but supporters of the prison hope they can return to their jobs in Machiasport with the help of the Maine legislature. Lawmakers and union leaders say they are exploring all of their options. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
The state legislature is considering a highly unusual bill. It would stop state subsidies going to the owner of two biomass energy plants and would instead divert that money to unpaid loggers who supplied them with wood. Steve Missler has more.
Stewart Solar LLC took over the biomass plants in Jonesboro and West Enfield late in 2016, shortly after the legislature and Governor Paul LePage approved a bill designed to prop up the state's ailing biomass industry and the contractors that supplied them with a $13.4 million taxpayer bailout. The deal was controversial, in part because it funneled taxpayer dollars to an industry that's having trouble competing with other energy producers. Supporters were focused on preserving logging jobs. But last year, loggers started to report that Stewart Solar wasn't paying them, a big problem given that they were the people who the bailout was designed to protect.
Cash flow is everything in this industry. You have to have cash flow to meet your business deadlines or you cannot survive.
Dana Duran is executive director of the Professional Logging Contractors of Maine, an industry group that lobbied for passage of the bailout 2 years ago. Duran told the legislature's Energy and Utilities Committee on Thursday that the new bill is necessary to protect the integrity of the subsidy program and the loggers who have waited months to be paid for the waste wood they supply to the company's two energy plants.
We've got small businesses with many families who rely upon this, and if they don't have that funding, they either have to lay those employees off, they have to borrow against their houses, they have to do different things.
Duran says the negative news reports and the new bill seem to have prompted Stewart Solar to pay its bills. Stewart Solar's attorney, Bill Hewitt, says the company has met its obligations to contractors. He urged lawmakers to defeat the bill and asserted that his client had resolved what he described as invoice disputes with logging contractors.
I heard it once said that it's a solution looking for a problem.
But lawmakers on the Energy Committee were skeptical. Representative Heather Sanborn, a Democrat from Portland, pressed Hewitt on his claim that contracting disputes have been settled. She cited a letter from the contractor W.T. Gardner & Sons, which states that Stewart Solar still owes them close to $200,000.
With regard to W.T. Gardner & Sons, I heard you say it's complicated. I didn't hear you say we've paid them.
So in terms of the amount that's in that letter, you're correct. We have not paid them $192,000.
Okay. Hewitt described the W.T. Gardner & Sons situation as a broader business dispute. But Democratic State Senator Mark Dion of Portland told Hewitt that the bill wouldn't be necessary if Stewart Solar had met its obligations in the first place.
The fact of the matter is, it's perceived you haven't paid your bills.
Dion, an attorney and former county sheriff, said Hewitt appeared to be mincing his words.
Remember when I chased people on the street, they called it theft, and when I put on a suit, they called it a financial misadventure. All right? But to the jury, I reminded them that actually it was still a theft.
But the bill lawmakers are considering is highly unusual. Not only does it specifically target one company, Stewart Solar, it effectively terminates its subsidy contract before it's been reviewed by the Public Utilities Commission. The PUC review is underway. And Paulina McCarter Collins, the agency's legislative liaison, says the bill also seeks to divert subsidy funds to Stewart Solar contractors, even though the PUC doesn't have jurisdiction over those contracts. Additionally, Steve McGrath, the governor's energy chief, testified against the bill, and that means it could face a higher hurdle for passage. The Energy Committee will review the proposal later this month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
You are listening to Maine Things Considered on Maine Public Radio. Did that dog bed you got at L.L. Bean years ago get chewed up by your dog? Until today, you could just take it back and get a replacement for no charge. But the company has announced that it's changing its famous unconditional return policy that's been a part of the brand since it started more than a century ago. As Patty White reports, the change comes as a response to the growing number of customers who've been taking advantage of the policy.
In the 5 years that Jules Gordon has worked in the customer service department at L.L. Bean in Freeport, she's seen thousands of returns. But there's one that stands out above the rest.
I've seen a leg of a chair. Just a leg.
Just a leg. Her colleague Dawn Seegers, with nearly 17 years under her belt in customer service, had a similarly perplexing return.
Someone returned a case of the sunglasses, and the sunglasses were in the lake.
Both customers got what they wanted, a brand new chair and a pair of sunglasses. But it's returns like those that have brought an end to a part of L.L. Bean's brand that's almost as legendary as its bean boot, its unlimited return policy. In a letter sent to customers on Friday, Executive Chairman Sean Gorman announced that returns must now be made within a year and have proof of purchase. The reason? A growing number of customers have misinterpreted L.L. Bean's lifetime guarantee to mean a product should last the customer's lifetime, not the product's.
I've seen too many people that are not being nice.
Dressed in L.L. Bean from flannel to foot, Gordon French makes a monthly trip to L.L. Bean with his wife from their hometown of Meredith, New Hampshire. He's all for the stricter return policy because of what he's seen in the returns line over the years, like one man who was holding a box of socks.
I was behind him. He says, I buy my socks here every year for Christmas time. And when I get a hole in them, I save them and I bring them back the next year.
Bring them all back.
And while he was standing there, he said, my shoes aren't right either. And he took his shoes off and ran, got a new pair of shoes.
Customer Molly Grenier of Lewiston says she's also witnessed highly suspect returns.
Just coming here to return things, I see people with trash bags full of stuff that they've probably bought at garage sales and from their grandparents or whatnot. So you know that they didn't just buy it and it's defective. You get a gift card and you can purchase anything you want.
These kinds of abuses have doubled in the past couple of years, according to L.L. Bean, accounting for 15% of all returns. Nearly all of the customers Maine Public Radio spoke to said they supported L.L. Bean's stricter return policy. But Richard Lindell of Limerick was miffed about a shoe return his wife made on Friday that resulted in a partial refund. He wonders if it would have been a full refund under the old policy.
Satisfaction guaranteed. If they rip on you and they're no good, that's not satisfied.
There are exceptions to the new one-year return policy if a product is truly defective. And customer service manager Jules Gordon says customers will still get great service.
The training is you're in this green shirt. You're 100% customer focused. You do what's right for the person in front of you and you do it with a smile.
And from now on, with a somewhat more restricted return policy. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, February 9th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.